one night in one American city. Multiply that by hundreds of cities, and what have you got? A country where culture means pornography and slasher films, where ethics means payoffs, graft, insider trading, where integrity means lying, whoring, and intoxication. This country is in deep trouble, people. This country is rotten to the core, and somebody better do something about it.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. Oh, we should all have that kind of passion. That's Eric Bogosian, of course. Was that movie important to you?
It was vital to me. There was a phase before I started working here at Cairo when I decided that I wanted to move out of music radio and do this, try to hand it this at least.
Yeah.
Where I probably watched this movie for days at a time. You talk about being immersed in something. That was a big film for me.
What year did that come out?
Oh, didn't...
The reason I am in this chosen profession is because of the movie Good Morning Vietnam, of all things. I was working in my hometown of Baltimore. I was tending bar, and I was working in the auto industry. I was selling cars for my dad. And in fact, by that time, I had moved into the F&I, finance and insurance portion of any car dealership. If you've ever bought a car at a car dealership, you will go in and meet a salesperson and negotiate and tell them what you're looking for. They'll show you various vehicles. If you get a good experience, they'll show you various vehicles that meet your family's needs and what you're after and your price range. You'll haggle with said car salesman. He'll go back to forth to his manager and try to negotiate on your behalf. It's a lot of cloak and dagger stuff. It's evolved dramatically since when I was in the business over 30 years ago. I'll give you that. Be the first person to admit that. Consumers are much more informed than they ever were. These days, the internet gives people so much information. Everyone knows what car dealers pay for their vehicles and how much profit they make when they sell a vehicle. The last thing that used to happen, I'm not sure if this might be the only thing, it's not the same anymore. You would go into a finance office where someone would have you sign the contracts for the car, tell you what your monthly payments would be, ask you what kind of insurance you'd like on the vehicle. Would you like extended warranties, those kind of various add-ons that dealers use to add to their profit margin. That was my final job, and I just hated it.
How could you hate such an exciting-sounding job? Come on now.
Because you had to take advantage of people. That was your job, was to make the most money for your car dealership. That's why you were there. I understand that. But you
had to be kind of predatory, sort of a sharkish sort of person
to enjoy that sort of work. Most successful deals that I was able to put together were the ones that were so onerous and hurtful to the people buying the cars out of pure ignorance. And those were the nicest people. It never fails. I think this is true in so many elements of life, that the most awful people get the best deals. The nicest people who trust you, we call those laydowns in the auto industry, they got the worst deals. I remember having a guy come in with his wife and like six children, I believe it was, who bought a minivan. And we so overcharged this guy for the minivan. And then I gave him the most ridiculous, interest rate on his loan, and then sold him all of these unnecessary elements. And I apologize to any car dealer that I'm undermining right now, but I think everybody knows the game by now. Whether it was fabric protection for the interior, undercoating for the car, rust proofing here, there, and everywhere. All the things that you do to add on additional profit, we just buried this guy in this car. This car lost 35 to 40% of its retail value the minute it leaves our dealership, because it becomes a used vehicle. They say the minute the taillights cross, the curb, the car loses a third of its value. And I just couldn't live with that anymore. I was doing this job and I was good at it, but I hated it. I just hated it. I hated myself for doing it. So I was tending bar at night to try to ease my soul. So, what I was doing to replenish my karma was getting people hammered. So as you can see, I was on a slippery slope to the seventh circle of hell.
Hey, with my cultural ancestry, that practically nominates you for sainthood.
Well, I'm Irish, so it did open a few doors to the afterlife. Anyway, I met a friend in radio, and we got to be friends over the bar I worked at. And I watched one weekend. I was watching Good Morning Vietnam, and I said, that's what I want to do. And that's how I ended up landing here. Or not here, but that's how I landed in radio, and that's how I landed in Seattle. a really short stay in my hometown of Baltimore on a radio station. And as I mentioned Bob Rivers earlier, Bob was moving and leaving town and going somewhere different and asked me to come with him. And my life took an abrupt 180 in a different direction than I thought it would. And I landed here and I've been happy about it ever since. But it's funny how that you can see something that inspires you so much that you decide that's what I want to do. That's my – and that's what worries me about movies like Dahmer and, you know, and the indulgence of what we use to entertain ourselves these days. You know, there's a story I was about to mention, and I feel that I'm almost playing into that unknowingly, that in self-indulgence of stuff we probably never need to see. Maybe it's not that dramatic.
Well, now that you mentioned it, everybody's going to want to know what it is.
Yeah, maybe I'm over dramatizing this moment. I did mention that the Niners beat the Rams on Monday Night Football tonight. I think it's a final. Yeah, 24-9. So everybody's 2-2 in the West, including your Seahawks. Well, the game was played in San Francisco, and the Rams didn't have a great night. They mustered 3 field goals throughout the course of the evening, and the Niners scored 24 points. So the Ram defense had an off night by any accounts. There was a moment just before halftime when a protester took the field at, I guess that's Levi Stadium still, if they haven't changed the branding rights to their stadium down there in Santa Clara where the Niners play their home games. A fan took the field in protest and had like a pink smoke bomb with him running across the field. And they never show this on network TV. They don't want to encourage copycats, those kind of things. You know, whenever somebody runs on the field at a sporting event, and it happens all too frequently. It's never shown on network TV for the most part. I think there's a hard, fast rule now where they never show this. But there's plenty of film of it, you know, going around already because while the network doesn't take the feed, the in-house cameras catch the action. This protester ran on the field in Santa Clara for whatever cause they felt so motivated and inspired by to protest. And there's a part of me that loves that. There's a part of me that loves the protester, someone who is willing to put their physical safety at risk, their freedom at risk, because they're probably going to go to jail, if not just for a night, maybe for longer. Who knows? It's a nonviolent protest unless Bobby Wagner steps in. And Bobby Wagner, as we all know, was a Seahawk linebacker out of Utah State for the last 10 years. He and the team couldn't come to terms, and Bobby Wagner sought his fortunes elsewhere and signed a deal with the Los Angeles Rams. Bobby was on the sideline as this protester made his way onto the field, and security was chasing this guy. And as usually the case, a protester tends to have a couple more steps on security. They're wily. They're hopped up on adrenaline. This is their moment. They've been waiting for this moment forever. And this guy was running around the field, and security was having a hard time catching him. And Bobby Wagner came off the sideline in his full Rams gear and leveled this guy. I mean, just leveled this guy. There's actually a video of it on ESPN if you guys want to go look. You know, Bobby and another player from the Rams, McKinley, kind of came off the sideline and just Bobby got this guy solid as a rock. It took me back to a day in my youth. I was born and raised in Baltimore, as I mentioned. I was a Baltimore Colts season ticket holder with my brother and my dad. You know, there was a day when somebody ran across the field in Baltimore, and we had a linebacker named Mike Curtis, who just clotheslined this. You know, and this guy at the time, he wasn't, you know, protesting animal rights or the war in wherever. He was just a goofball who had a few too many beers. This guy ran on the field and tried to steal the game ball. This was in like the 70s, you know, and Mike Curtis just clotheslined this cowboy and took him off his feet. I'm sure there's maybe still photos of it. There may be even some video of it out there. YouTube's a wonderful thing and a curse. I feel sorry for all you kids raised in the era of YouTube and social media who put all your ding-dong moves on the internets forever. You guys, what are you thinking? I am so glad there's no evidence of the idiocy of my youth. I cannot begin to tell you how many things we did as kids, and we just thank our lucky stars that we weren't trying to be stars, trying to be influencers and TikTok stars. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's kids half a third, a quarter my age making millions of dollars as influencers.
And they're all going to spend it on therapy in 5 years when they're no longer famous. So there you go. Enjoy it while it lasts.
And some of them are paying for their college. I've got a friend in radio who used to be local. The show didn't last here. And she moved on to another market and is having success. Well-deserved. A wonderful lady. Her child, I think it's her youngest daughter, is a TikTok influencer who gives makeup tips to teenage girls. And those are fine. That's great. You know, it's healthy and wholesome and informative. And she has a following and she's got a real gift for communication, just like her mom. And it started with, free samples from makeup companies that she could share her tips with a following. And she would get free makeup for it. But then she started having some success and getting some followers. And she became what they call an influencer. Influencers, people who can speak clearly and look good on camera. I have neither of those skills at the moment. Influencers are just that. They have people follow what they do and trust what they say, and they influence people.
And that sounds like a really great, wholesome story, not to take anything away from that. But then you hear about
if you jump to the punchline of my joke, I'm going to come in there and pull your eyebrows off.
I don't know the punchline of your joke.
Does it have a K in it?
Why would you assume I knew anything about spelling? I talk. I don't write.
Okay, fair enough. Then by all means, tell your story. I'll save my joke for later. Come on. Give it to me.
Not really a story so much as just, yes, that's great and all and good for her. But at the same time, and I think it goes back to what we talked about at the top of the show, without discretion, without maturity, without centeredness, people don't know how to separate the wheat from the chaff on the internet.
Right.
And there is such a glut of people saying, if I act stupid, if I pile up a bunch of milk crates and jump
right
off it, then I'll be famous and people will know me. And that even extends to people who I think do violent things just because they think that somebody's going to notice them. And it's a cry for attention that they're not getting in a healthy way. And that's sad.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. But there are so many examples. There are folks, what's the latest TikTok challenge? Getting out of a moving vehicle while somebody films you and the car rolls along while you dance next to the car. It's just idiocy. Car surfing is an internet challenge, a TikTok challenge. I surfed a car once as a kid. It was the stupidest thing I've ever done in my life. Climbed out of a moving car at 45 miles an hour. I wasn't driving at the time, at least. But, a friend of mine was driving down the road at 45 miles an hour. Me and another buddy rolled down our back windows. We may have had a few barley pops at the bar that night. I don't remember. Clearly an indication that's what happened. We climb onto a moving car at 45 miles an hour and ride down the street on top of this guy's car. We were idiots, and we were just being idiots. We weren't trying to be star idiots. We weren't trying to get famous for this. The last thing we want to do is get caught or show this off. But, kids these days, what are you going to do, huh? I'm such an old man. Get off my lawn. No, what I was going to say was
that I'm younger than you and I sometimes sound older than you. That's a strange one.
The fact that I've never grown up is why we get to do this together, my friend. We're together. We probably got a maturity level of 27, 28 together combined. Some days you're 12. Some days I'm 15. It's fluid.
And some days I'm 80.
Yeah, it's fluid. I was going to talk about an influencer named Kim Kardashian, who you may have heard in Lisa's newscast, got in a little trouble for her influencing skills because she's a multi-billionaire. And all those Kardashians, and I always thought Kardashians were one of the foreign, alien races on Star Trek. That's what I knew from Kardashian. But the Kardashians have become a national phenomenon, and I have one of the people, we count ourselves few and very proud, who have never sat through an episode of any of their iterations of their television shows. I've never had any inclination whatsoever, any desire to watch a spoiled kid, make millions and live a coddled, indulged life. And people who watch that stuff and are fans, just it boggles my mind. But Kim Kardashian, like all her siblings, have made a phenomenal living, not just as reality TV stars, but as endorsers, entrepreneurs. Her youngest sister, I think it is. What is it, Kylie? Or I can't keep them straight. Kendall, I can't. They all begin with K. But she's kids worth $1 million because she's got various product lines of apparel, cosmetic, accessory, whatever it might be. Well, one of the things Kim was promoting to her multiple millions of followers on social media, people who eat this up with a spoon and can't get enough, rise in the morning to see what the Kardashians have doing. I almost said Kardashians, but that's not their thing. They're not, you know, I don't want to, there's only one K in Kardashian. Kim Kardashian put out on, I think it was her Instagram, might have been TikTok, I can't tell, I don't speak those languages, about a cryptocurrency that she encouraged her followers to go jump up on. Without mentioning the fact that she was paid $250,000 to make one post on her social media accounts.
Well, that's a relief. I was afraid she was going to end up in poverty.
Yeah, I mean, she could, you know, whiz all that away. Well, she, you know, posted this endorsement to her followers of a cryptocurrency. And given the volatility of cryptocurrencies this year, you know, that's a dangerous thing to do. You're playing with people's livelihoods at that point. And when you do it, you know, think, oh, I think this is great, I'm a big fan of this, without knowing people are, you're being paid to say that. It's like eating a sandwich made with nothing but Miracle Whip and horseradish because someone's paying you to say that. It's not going to taste good. Kim didn't mention that she was a paid endorser. So I think it was the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, it may have been a different branch of the government, slapped her with a $1.5 million fine for, you know, endorsing something to her millions of followers. That could be financially lucrative, could be financially disastrous for folks, given the volatility of the cryptocurrency market in the last years. You know, I don't get the whole crypto thing. I don't get the whole blockchain. I know some folks understand its value, understand its you know, it as an asset these days as we move forward. I don't get it. I'm too old to learn that many new things, you know. So I don't. I pick and choose what I get to do and learn. How I spend my time and effort and energies. But I do know that when you're playing with people's you know, emotions and you're playing with people's faith in you and your credibility, which is what Kim Kardashian and all those Kardashians are trading on, is their cred. When you're doing that with something that could ruin somebody, you got to be careful. And when you're doing something because it's a monetary reward for you, if you're being paid to do it, you got to disclose that so people can weigh that information through the lens of, yeah, you're being paid to tell me that Braunschweiger is the most tasty meat byproduct on the face of the earth or whatever she's selling this week. I can't keep track.
And again, we say cred, but why as a society have we given people like this cred? That's the larger question. And apparently it's Monday and Matt's going to be cranky tonight.
No, I know the answer. Call on me. I know the answer to this.
Spike, yes.
Because we all think we're going to get there one day. We all see someone of success who has limited skills. Who didn't go to Juilliard, who didn't go to MIT, who didn't run a whatever, you know, dash, drill a ball, you know, shoot a cup, whatever it might be. They have no skill. And we all think, man, I don't have any skill either. Maybe I could be a billionaire one day. We all see these people of lofty accomplishments and think that could be me. That's why they're so popular. They're no better than us. They're just infinitely richer than us. And we all have that hope. You know, that's why we never root against the multi-billionaire barons who are controlling and destroying our lives for personal profit, because we all think we could be them one day. That's the ultimate American dream. We could all be rich and famous.
Well, I have to congratulate Kanye West for one thing.
Getting
he
out?
That entire family look like geniuses.
He really? Which is a tough, tough needle to thread. You know, when you make the Kardashians look like, you know, a debate team you want to join, you are really set. You're doing something. You're getting it done. Good point. It's Kyra Knights. I'm Spike O'Neill along with Matt Butler. We'll be right back with more stuff. So we're glad you joined us. Please don't go anywhere.
I bought a bourgeois house in the Hollywood Hills with a trunk load of $100,000 bills. Man came by to hook up my cable TV. We settled in for the night, my baby and me. We switched round and round till half past dawn. There was 57 channels and nothing on. 57 channels and
here we go again, Seattle. It's Bruce Springsteen. Spike O'Neill with you, Cairo Knights. I did this to you last week. I'm doing it again.
I did it too.
Well, now, home entertainment. Last night,
that's
all good, man. Last week was the boss's birthday. That's why we did it, right? Yeah. Today we're talking about Bruce's new album of covers. You know, Bruce has got a new album coming out, and Bruce has put out a lot of albums over the years. I'm, you know, a lot of folks think that Springsteen's a it's an acquired taste for all of you guys who don't really get it. And I get that you don't get it. I was born in a different part of the country. I'm 33 years in the Northwest, but still kind of an East Coaster at my roots, if not in my heart, in my roots. You know, there's an East Coast mentality that is just different from those folks born and bred in the Northwest.
And even me, for me, growing up in the South, Springsteen was not, I mean, you'd hear some of his big hits on the radio.
Right.
But he was not a, I would not say that Bruce is an artist that a lot of the South where I grew up identified with culturally in
no.
a strong way. For them, it was much more about Southern rock.
Well, yeah,
like
of course.
That was the mainstream there. And I liked some of his hit songs, but he was an artist that I definitely aged into. Because as I had more experience in my life and had more miles on me, I really appreciated the stories and the struggles he was talking about in his songs. And that made me more of a fan as I got older.
I can appreciate that. There's a lot of folks that feel like Bruce has got nothing in common with the working man anymore. And that's a fair criticism for a guy who just sold his catalog, his entire body of musical work, to a publishing company for $500 million. You know, that's on top of all the money he's made in his career, a wildly successful recording and touring career. Bruce has been the number one touring act on the planet numerous times in his life. And whether or not you are a fan, it's entirely yours to decide, of course.
It's really an interesting dichotomy, though, like we were talking about in the last segment, where people are both aspirational in the sense that they would all like to believe that they could become as rich as Bruce Springsteen with their talents, but yet at the same time, when he has his wealth and has his talents and then speaks out in a way they don't agree with, all of a sudden they're very mad at Bruce Springsteen.
I confess to the same, you know, bigotry in my disdain for Ted Nugent music. We talked last week about how can you support an artist you've appreciated over the years once they do something or say something or, you know, hold a belief that you strongly disagree with.
Now, I saw a meme, and this is where I'll confess some of my hypocrisy, I guess, but I saw a meme over the weekend, speaking of Ted Nugent, that made me really laugh. It said, it had a picture of Ted Nugent standing beside Kid Rock, right?
Uh-huh.
And he goes, "These guys make music for people who know exactly how much Sudafed you can get for a catalytic converter."
And that's a horrible thing for us to laugh at, Matthew. Horrible thing for us to laugh
at.
Shame
on me.
Shame on us. Not everybody who likes their music is a catalytic converter stealing meth head. Not all of them, anyway. Come on. Generalization's a terrible, terrible thing. Actors like Kevin Spacey, you know, a brilliant actor. I'm a huge fan of his work. But I can't even look at his work anymore without thinking, you know, about his horrific personal indulgences, you know. So and we're talking about Bruce. Let's talk about Bruce. I mean, we're talking about Bruce. The reason we bring it up is Bruce has an album of covers coming out called Only the Strong Survive. And as I mentioned, Bruce has been one of the most successful artists in history, one of some of the most successful tours of all time. If you've never been to a live Springsteen show because you can't stand his music, you're missing out. I think Bruce's live performances are the stuff of legends. I've seen him in concert 50-some-odd times over my life since I was 15 years old. So, like I said, I'm from the East Coast. I've got a Northwest heart, I hope, but my soul is still very much Eastern, East Coast, you know, urban. And that's what Bruce always spoke to. And his music, it's tough to write for the working man when you are a multi-millionaire, if not billionaire by now. But Bruce still goes out there every night and performs for his audience. He is not there. Obviously, he's not touring because he needs the money. He's touring because he loves to do what he does. He's, I think, 71 now, 72 now, I think, or somewhere in that range, if I'm not mistaken. And he's still, you know, has like, you know, 2% body fat, and the guy still performs 3.5 hours a night when the band plays and tours. It's a thing to behold. It's an amazing sight. And part of his legacy over the years has been paying tribute to the artist who inspired him, when he was growing up, the music he loved and listened to informed who he was as a human and as an artist, as a father, as a son, as a brother, blah, 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 blah. And this is an album of those songs. You know, Bruce, and if you don't like Bruce's music doing his own stuff, I don't know, maybe you'll like him doing something by the Temptations or Someday We'll Be Together by Diana Ross and the Supremes. Maybe you'll think it's just the worst thing you've ever heard. You thought it was bad enough when he sang, you know, Born in the USA. Wait till you hear him butcher Diana Ross and the Supremes. Oh, you poor people.
Yeah, the new one is out on November 11th. It's called Only the Strong Survives.
Yes, sir.
Most of the covers on it are old soul classics,
yes,
which is right up my alley.
Exactly.
So we got music on here from Jerry Butler, no relation, but still a great soul man. The Commodores, Frank Wilson, The Four Tops, The
yes.
Temptations, Aretha Franklin. This is, I'm really excited
right.
about this. In fact, can we hear a little bit of the first single?
Do you have something?
Yeah, Do I Love You? Indeed I Do. That is a
I do
Frank
now.
Wilson
that
song.
One, right?
There, yeah, let me hit it.
Doop, doodaloo, doop, doop. That one. Hey, man, at 72, I think it is, 71, I hope to be able to ask for more pudding. This guy is, listen to that. That guy's set in his 70s, man. And I don't care what you think about him as an artist. You got to admire the work of the band. Those are his guys. Those aren't studio cats. Those are his guys. If you don't like it, you're really going to hate this. The album's called Covers Volume 1. So there's probably more coming.
Technically not his first covers album. He did have the Seeger Sessions.
Right, right.
Sometime back.
And I hope, you know, can you bring up some of that? Because some of that's amazing.
Let me see what I can do.
Yeah, thank you. Because we could do a whole show about, you know, musical inspiration and covers and who was inspired by what. You know, the singer-songwriter protester is important in our national history as Americans. And, you know, whether it's Woody Guthrie or Pete Seeger, whom Bruce was a fan of, and actually, like as Matt mentioned, put out the We Shall Overcome, the Seeger Sessions.
I thought I heard the captain say, pay me my money down. Tomorrow is our sailing day. Pay me my money down.
I'm afraid to look at the text line. I love the folks are coming to the defense of Ted Nugent. Good for you. I loved Great White Buffalo, Joe and Snohomish. I'm with you, dude. I loved Ted Nugent.
Stranglehold was a great riff.
Ted Nugent made amazing music, but I just couldn't get past, you know, his narrow-minded, I thought, political point of views. And a lot of you feel the way about Springsteen. I get it. You know,
the thing with Nugent was not just that he was political. Like, Alice Cooper is a Republican.
Right.
But one of them is a gentleman. One of them is very rude.
Right.
And I lost Nugent about the time he got really rude and crude.
I mentioned that. He was on stage at a live show and then talked about, you know, violating the female presidential candidate with a machine gun. I mean, dude, come on. What do you got?
Oh, that was just the regular bum.
Oh, okay. I thought we'd play.
Not another Springsteen.
Okay, you got me all hooked up here, buddy. I love it.
But this new album is great. On November 11th, so I'm excited. I think it'll be good.
I'm too. I could listen to this all day, too, man.
This is Soulful Stretch from Young Holt Unlimited. Back in the 60s, don't recall which year. Very mellow, though.
Dude, we have to quit teasing it. One of these nights, we're going to get together and just do a show about nothing but music. Okay?
Absolutely. I'm in for that.
And I think it's good so far tonight. We haven't really talked any politics, and we're not gonna.
Oh.
Well, maybe a little, but I'm already ticking off enough people with my Springsteen infatuation.
Not really.
I hear you. I know, but last week we kind of overdid it, so.
Can you overdo Bruce
Springsteen? No, Tasty? Thank Come you on. Very much. It's Cairo Nights. We'll be right back, folks, I promise.
Have you ever wanted to buy someone you love something, but you couldn't afford it? But you just bought it anyway.
Yes.
You know how that go. Yes, I'm living on daydreams. Don't buy me something I can't afford.
I don't recognize this, buddy.
This is one of the new crop of young R&B soul traditionalists, Rafael Sadiq. Used to play with the pop band Tony back in the day.
Wow.
And this is what he's doing nowadays.
This is great.
Yeah. The album is called Stone Rolling. Got to see him live in Philadelphia once. That was awesome.
Nice. It reminds me very much of the band that works with Colbert.
Jean-Baptiste.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Stay Human. Yeah. I love this kind of stuff. Great stuff. Welcome back to Cairo Nights. I'm Spike O'Neill along with Matt Butler. It's funny you play this and we're talking about money right here because there's a move in Australia, a petition, to take the late Queen Elizabeth, off of their currency. Many of you may not know that Australia is, in fact, still a part of the British Empire. Is that? I mean, I'm not sure what technically how that all works out. I don't think they have an empire anymore.
It's, yeah, I would have to go back and reread it because I studied it once and I still can't explain it.
Oh, here we go. Let's go to the Cairo newsroom.
News
when we don't know, before questions. We make something up, ladies and gentlemen, Lisa Brooks.
Well,
yeah,
make stuff up.
Just quickly, it's part of the Commonwealth.
The Commonwealth.
There are 30, okay. I think 35 or 36 nations now in the Commonwealth.
The Commonwealth of the British Empire?
I don't believe the word empire is there.
I just want to use the word
empire. Part of the Commonwealth.
British Commonwealth.
Yes.
As is Canada, right?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Yes.
But thank you.
There is a more of a distinction between 7 or 8 countries and other countries that are considered in the Commonwealth, and I'm not enough of an Anglophile to know that.
The fact that you knew the word Anglophile puts you head and shoulders above Matt and
see
I.
Later.
Thank you so much for that.
I knew the word Anglophile too. Be nice.
Part of the British Commonwealth, Australia still has the Queen on their money, and some folks want her replaced. And I get the thought behind that. You know, Assistant Treasury Minister Andrew Lee revealed that the new king may not necessarily replace his mother on the $5 note in the way new coins will feature him. Because new coins in the Australian currency family will have King Charles on their coins to replace the late Queen Elizabeth II. But there's a petition going around to replace the Queen, Her Majesty, the Queen, with an Australian rather than, you know, the king of the Commonwealth, King Charles III. And the one getting all the attention is maybe the most noteworthy Australian. I'm not versed on Australian history. I'm less versed in that than I am on whether as they're part of the British Commonwealth. Thank you, Lisa. They want the crocodile hunter, Steve Irwin, on their $5 note. And I'm not sure what Australians of note that I'm unaware of that are flying under my radar. I know Helen Reddy was a Aussie, a very famous Aussie. Wasn't Olivia Newton-John an Aussie?
Keith Urban
is an Aussie. Although I wouldn't put Keith Urban, while he's very successful, on the status of a Olivia Newton-John, let alone a Helen Reddy.
How about Mark Knopfler?
See, now we're talking about what I'm talking about. How about Angus Young?
There you go.
How about Angus and Malcolm together on a five note, huh? I tell you what, I'd swap out some currency to have that. How about Crocodile Dundee? If you're going to go, you know, Steve Irwin was a conservationist. Let's be clear and give him the respect that he is due. The late Steve Irwin, the crocodile hunter, who, of course, came into our life as a TV star, but he was first and foremost an Australian conservationist. And that's noteworthy, pardon the pun. That is, you know, that's a very accomplished thing to do with a life, is to dedicate your life. And his show wasn't about, you know, watch me pull this, you know, apple out of an alligator's mouth. His show was about animals and their importance in our life, in our world. His daughter, Bindi, I believe, is continuing on his legacy of conservation and the importance of caring for and protecting the Earth's animal species. So in that regard, I got, you know, it'd be hard to make an argument against Steve Irwin.
I had to.
This is Colin Hay, right?
Well, it is Men at Work.
It's Men at Work, but I was trying Colin Hay, right?
Singer.
Yeah. Who's the guy from, was Beds Are Burning? Who was that?
That's Midnight Oil.
Midnight Oil. Wasn't he like a lawyer and actually a politician in Australia?
Oh, he was.
He
I
was,
right?
He was a lawyer or a barrister, whatever it is in Australia.
Yeah, he was like an MP.
Right, Lisa will come running in now. Tell me what the guy from Midnight Oil was. And those guys were fantastic too, Beds Are Burning. We'll look it up during the break. We're going to go to commercial, come back with answers. We'll have answers. I hope you have questions. It's Kyra Nance. We'll be right back after these.